Closing things. Close your application so it doesn't fuck up your podcast.
Did that come out in 99? I'm surprised nobody reviewed it.
I always thought that was like Third Eye Blind, but that's not just so. I think that's just like some random band, right?
I think it's Supersonic. I think they're called Supersonic. I think Demsonic. That was the only hit.
Demsonic.
Semisonic. Okay.
I think it's Demsonic.
They, no, you might be right. They were a strictly one hit wonder, but damn, that was a good song. When you're sitting at the bar at 2 o'clock in the morning,
you know, guys. If I'm trying to sing a song to start the show, you can't just talk about the song over me singing the song. Now it fails.
Sorry, Adam. We're trying to draw you out. If that gets stuck in my head when I lay down my pillow tonight, I'm gonna be super, super irritated.
It's opening time. It's time to get the podcast started.
See, now John's just stolen my whole thunder. Thunder? Thunder? I can't even speak. Dear God. All right, hold on here. This is gonna be a bad show.
This whole episode is like the website this week, Adam.
Just crashed.
Welcome to the Punkest Podcast. My name is Adam White. I'm recording for you here in my. I was going to say secret basement, but it's not really a secret. It's the basement.
They're going to say chateau. Do you live in a chateau? Is your house chateau shaped?
We're not in like a chateau part of the world. I'm sort of just in. I'm in a very
like ranch.
No,
honestly, I don't really know what a chateau is. I mean, I know the word chateau, but what is a chateau?
It's like the kind of house you put in the mountains if you live in the Alps or something, isn't it?
It's a small house in the mountains.
No, that's a chalet.
No, it's like taller. They're taller. Oh, it's a chalet.
That's a chalet.
Is that what I said?
A chateau. So the only chateau. I know offhand would be, or no, sorry. There's a handful of like really famous Canadian buildings that are chateaus, right? There's a Chateau Frontenac. There's a Chateau Laurier, and they're all. Big kind of like opulent old hotels from the, I don't know, from the 40s or 50s or something like that with like copper roofs and, you know, real landmarks in Canada. So those are all chateaus, but to me, that's different than a chalet for sure.
I may in fact use the two terms interchangeably. I'm not sure.
Here's two words I mixed up recently. Shogun and Ronin. I was using the word Shogun, but I meant Ronin.
Yeah, I could probably mix those up too, John.
Tom, what do you think a Shogun is?
It's like a Japanese fighter guy, isn't it?
That's what I thought.
Or Shogun, as the rest of the world pronounces it. I'm not saying you're wrong, but I just thought it was Shogun.
Adam, what do you think a Shogun or a Shogun is?
Oh, he's pronounced it two different ways. Neither of them the same way I did it, Adam. Did you see that?
Ooh, okay.
See that condescending pronunciation he did there?
So now I'm not super up on my old Japanese terminology, but was a shogun not a ruler or a. I don't know, like a warlord kind of guy. Like was a shogun was not someone in charge, were they not? Whereas a ronin was like a masterless samurai.
Adam is almost entirely correct. It's not entirely correct. A shogun is a warlord that controls an area that is only nominally subservient to an emperor, but it's actually an independent force, more or less. Whereas a ronin is a warrior that travels the countryside without a master, as opposed to a samurai, which is a armed troop. Of either a ronin or an emperor. I mean, of a shogun or an emperor.
Wow, Adam, if I ever had to phone a friend for Who Wants to Be a Millionaire and I have a question about Canadian architecture or Japanese ruling class, I know right who I'm calling.
Yeah, I'm good for something. So a chateau is formally...
It's just formally, an incredibly broad base of knowledge.
According to Wikipedia, at least, a chateau is a manor house or residence of the lord of the manor or a country house of nobility or gentry with or without fortifications, originally and still most frequently in French-speaking regions. So I guess that kind of makes sense why, like, you have the Chateau Frontenac in Quebec City. So that that'll make sense. Mm. I mean, of course, none of the Canadian chateaus are listed on the Wikipedia here. They're all, like, you know, like the Palace of Versailles and shit like that. So we can't catch a break with, you know, the French. But anyway, so this is the Pungus podcast. We talk about architecture. We talk about Japanese words. And so this is we're treading a lot of water right now because the website that we are all ostensibly involved with, which is punknews.org, isn't working right now, which makes us which makes our task of talking about the news that recently happened on punknews.org somewhat more difficult than it normally is, because not only are we unprepped, which is like the usual, but we can't actually read the stories on air to know specifically what we're talking about. So this is really going to be a show where we just read articles from like Brooklyn Vegan and Consequence of Sound and stuff like that. And it's going to make the show much better because things will grammatically be spelled correctly.
Because they're like super well written, right?
Oh,
Adam,
yeah.
Adam, you do not get to comment on how well the punk news articles are or are not written. When you start writing articles, you can comment on that. But until you don't do, you don't get to comment on that.
Yeah,
when we
want to
know about French architecture, we'll talk to you, Adam.
That's right.
I frequently, when trying to read the article, will run into some grammatical abortion where I'm just trying to understand what's happening. No, but you know,
what have you done to improve that issue?
Not to complain about it. I mean, if you don't say anything,
if you don't get to pitch in, then you don't get to complain. I'm sorry.
No, that's not how it works.
That is how it works.
I can complain about all sorts of stuff I don't have anything to do with.
That doesn't mean you're valid in your complaint. Then
I never said I was, but I'm still going to do it.
Not to mention, if you're going to mention Punk News failings, then let's also mention Punk News wonderful virtues. Brooklyn Vegan does not cover punk to the depth that we cover. Brooklyn Vegan does not do the type of interviews that we do. Brooklyn Vegan does not run the type of reviews that we run. Further, Brooklyn Vegan does not do the kind of funny articles that we do, nor do they do the more, I guess, in-depth, unusual articles that we do. So if we're really going to, you know, stack the plate up.
And most importantly, they don't have the great personalities that we do.
That's right. And honestly, I'm not dissing Brooklyn. I like Brooklyn Vegan. I'm not dissing.
Yeah, they're all right.
Yeah, I mean, as far as music news websites go, they're one of my more.
But they do, John. They have one key thing that makes them better than us right now. And that it's if they're I go vegans. To brooklynvegan.com, the website loads. So.
Fair enough. I bet you they even have posts on Facebook.
So this is it. This is but you know what? Part of the beauty of Punk News is that we are not an organization that is an organization. We sometimes just have to we wake up and we take stock of the smoldering ruination that is our, that is our kingdom, and we just have to, you know, put on a loose collection of
Ronins and shoguns
and
paid livers
and broken websites and everything else.
Yeah.
So anyway, so the website doesn't work. So we're just going to wing it. We'll see what happens. But something that did work, at least I hope,
it was working earlier today.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks.
I did my Monday morning work check.
You stepped on my seg there. Something that did work.
Sorry.
Was another John Gentile show in Philadelphia.
Yeah, actually, we did the Sonic Attack this Saturday in Philadelphia. And this is, you know, I kind of break my shows down into two styles or two categories, big and small. This was a smaller one. And with the smaller one, there's always the threat that they actually won't go off as planned or won't be that well attended or anything like that. This one, I would say, was either the biggest or second biggest success for the small show, rivaling the Spring Slam Down 2018, I guess it was. Spring Slam Down 2018. This one was really cool. It was Vixen 77. It was Chris of Crazy the Brand Solo. It was Catbite, and it was Ronnie Anonymous' seventh victim, which is Ronnie Anonymous and Janet Bresler doing synth punk. And it was called the Sonic Attack, which was a Hawkwind reference that I think no one got at all. And the theme was, here's the intro that I did. So when people came in, like I handed out newspapers or newspaper one sheets that said the multinational conglomerated states of North America Incorporated, formerly United States of America. And it had like news articles in there, like Jeff Bezos merges his consciousness with Steve Jobs, worker productivity goes up 43%. The workday is now 5:30 a.m. to 11:30 p.m. That kind of a thing, like really depressing stuff. And then at the bottom, I put wanted individuals: Vixen77, Cadbite, Chris, and Roddy Anonymous. And it said, if you see them, do not approach them. A sonic attack may be imminent. Alert your neutralization squad. I put up like wanted posters all over the place, like with them on it. And then like when people came in, I had like the Terminator 2 soundtrack playing, and I had Blade Runner soundtrack playing, and a couple others that I'll talk about in a second. So anyways, this was the 11th show that I've thrown, and so I did significant changes. First of all, the poster I did didn't follow the exact form of my previous posters. The handout was, instead of doing like a booklet, I did like a newspaper thing, and I did not wear the Punk News blue tuxedo that I fashioned. Instead, I wore all black. I wore glasses that glow in the dark, and I wrapped myself in glow bracelets, probably about 40 glow bracelets I wrapped myself in. And then I jumped up on stage and I said, Philadelphia, you are now in the future. It is 2019. The joke being, it is 2019. And then I said, in this future, you are assigned a pocket personal computer that tracks your every move. Global corporations tell you what you can and cannot do with your own body, and mysterious foreign powers dictate what your local representatives can and cannot say. You are trapped, but you are not doomed. And then like a bunch of explosions went off, and then I like said it's a sonic attack and yelled out the name of the bands and stuff, and then we kicked it off. And honestly, it was awesome. Vixen77, they do like straight up like runaway style punk. They were amazing. Chris of Crazy in the Brains is, I mean, dude, like every single time I see Crazy in the Brains, they just totally win people over. He started, people weren't really digging it. By about halfway through the first song, he had the entire room in the palm of his hands. Then Catbite did like their two-tone ska thing, and people were jumping. And then the last part was Rodney and Janet doing Seventh Victim, which is like weird synth punk. And he actually really freaked people out, because like during the show, he like started screaming, and then he jumped off the stage and like ran through the audience screaming. He comes back with a giant water bottle, like the kind in a water cooler, and he starts smashing against the wall, and he's smashing against the ground, and he's just like screaming, and people do not know what to do. Like he's just like smashing this thing, and then he gets back on stage and continues the show, and like people had no idea what was going on. Between the bands, I played like Kraftwerk and Gary Numan and that kind of a thing. But also, people also got freaked out. It is amazing how like even the slightest deviation of what people are used to kind of freaks them out. During the between music, I took one of those text-to-speech programs, and I had it say stuff like, alert, Vixen77 has been sighted in the area. If you see them, alert your neutralization squad so that they can be executed. And like people like freaked out, because all of a sudden the background music they kind of like phased into, weren't really paying attention to, jumped out and started speaking to them. Like even those two little things like really kind of freaked people out. So I mean, honestly, it was an awesome, like the bands were all fantastic. Like the bands really were all fantastic. They were all pretty different from each other, but they weren't too different from each other. So like the crowd was jiving all night long. It was super cool. And honestly, boys, I mean, I was gonna pull back from doing shows this year and even next year, but I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing, but I'm psyched if I want to keep doing them, like starting in February again. Like it was a good night. So I don't know what I'm going to do. I mean, I've got a lot of crazy ideas that I want to do, but it was a lot of fun. It turned out really well, but like, I don't know if throwing shows are the best use of my time, except for they keep coming. There have been a couple ones that were rocky, but like ones like this, like Summer Soiree 3, Summer Chimera, it's like just a fantastic artistic experience, you know?
So this was at a record store again?
It's at a place called Creep Records, which I love. It's in Philadelphia. It is a record store, but it's got a venue attached. And the venue is...
Oh, okay. It's got its own space.
Right. The venue is essentially a bar without a bar. You know what I mean?
Well, when you said it had a stage, I'm like, oh, it has a stage.
It's got a one-foot stage. Not a huge, you know, one-foot stage, a professional sound system, a mixing board. But the only drawback is it's got to be done by 10. And the one question I want to keep doing them. I don't know if I should keep doing them, but I definitely want to. The other thing is, four bands in 3 hours, I really like doing four bands in 3 hours, especially if it's like smaller bands, you know. But the question
quick,
is like,
quick setup though, quick setup time.
Yeah, you see, I'm constantly fighting the clock, constantly. So if I did three bands, it'd be a lot easier. But I feel like the fourth band, like when it's all small-ish bands, I feel like the fourth band is what makes it special, you know.
Well, if it's small bands, it's half hour sets.
Right. Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah.
And anything longer than that for a band you don't know at all is too long anyway.
Well, yeah. I mean, honestly, if you haven't won them over in 12 minutes, you're not going to win them over in 30, you know.
It's true. Or 45.
Or 45. Or like when I saw that band open for Robert Plant, an hour and a half. Oh, my God. Oh, that was brutal. That was brutal.
Yeah. Most headliners in the punk world don't play more than an hour.
I know. That was brutal. An hour and a half opener. Oh, man.
Well, that's good. I'm glad the show went well. One day, I'm going to surprise you and show up.
Yeah, Tom. A lot of cool stuff planned. For next summer, I tentatively have my biggest live show project vaguely outlined in my brain today. I don't know if it's going to happen, but if it does happen, you should come out for that one.
Spoiler alert. It's Cro-Mags with Cro-Mags JP opening.
Yeah, right. Nothing could go wrong there.
Just like a bloody brawl.
Yeah, I mean, nothing can go wrong there at all.
Yeah, you know? You're going to want to be at this thing and wearing body armor. Well, good.
Well, good.
How you like that for a seg? Mm-hmm.
John, I love that you're doing these. I like that you're having fun with them. I hope they're fulfilling for you to put on. The idea
if
of,
by fulfilling you mean he's making a big fat stack of cash, then definitely
I hope you're
not
making any. Yeah, no, I mean I hope you're not becoming progressively poorer, but I'm not convinced that anything in the indie music universe is going to make anyone any money, so you have to have like some other motivation.
As long as you're becoming poorer very, very slowly, it's okay.
Yeah, it's good. I'm glad that you are able to put these things on and that you're putting them on. I am If there's something that like terrifies me of putting my toe into, it's putting on shows. And it's
but you did that once already.
Yeah, like I did, but like in a way, it wasn't. I mean, it wasn't super well attended, but it was also wasn't my city, right? So
yeah, yeah.
So I was sort of breezing in and like and you know like so me and Mel K put on a show a couple Februarys ago. And, you know, like she had the venue contact and, you know, like a lot of kind of like the local Toronto based, you know, a lot of the know-how about like how Toronto works, because there's something about that place that, and maybe Philly's, maybe all big cities are like this, but I know that Toronto specifically works like this, is that like show timing and stuff like that in Toronto is always really super weird. Whereas like, let's say you were doing a show in down in St. Catharines here. The show would go as you would expect, which is that like the headliner would headline and the bands who are playing before the headliner would play before the headliner. Shows in Toronto don't actually always work that way because like everything starts incredibly late because I'm not exactly sure why. There's some reason that has
to
be.
It's a big city.
Yeah, thing. Everything starts incredibly late, and a lot of the times you don't want to be the last band playing because because the crowds will leave or people will try to like get to the last bus out of wherever they are. So it's often, you'll have bills where, you know, the band that is the, you know, the quote unquote headliner is at the top of the bill, but you'll get to the show and they'll actually play like second or third, say out of four bands, because they're just trying to take advantage of when the crowd is there at its maximum before people start to vanish. And it's just a rhythm that is not my rhythm. So I'd be very hesitant about just, you know, breezing into Toronto and putting on a show because like, it's not my pattern. But then the opposite is that, you know, I've gone to see incredible artists play in St. Catharines and I have every bit of respect for the people that run the venues that are here, but I've seen incredible artists play to nobody in the room, and Like just having to do that repeatedly, I think would be very soul crushing.
Well, now that it's over, the dogs, that was not a well attended. I mean, there was a few people there was like, well, not enough, you know. And it was rough. I mean, that was the only show where I was like watching my watch, like, please be over, please be over, please be over. The weird part was the band, like, had a – like, I thought the band would be pissed off, but they were, like, totally rocking out. At the end, they were like, oh, that was great, man. Thanks so much. And I'm like, there's, like, 20 people here. You know what I mean? So that's rough. That's the gamble, you know.
Right, so there's that aspect to it. But then I'm looking at it and going, like, you know, even though St. Catharines is a 20-25 minute trip from where I am, there is some like amount of civic pride in my brain where I'm like, you know, it would be nice to actually like figure out how to put on a show in Niagara Falls that people would go to. But that's the problem, is that like, I'm sure I could figure out how to put on a show in Niagara Falls, but people would not go to it because like there is,
you don't have enough cool young friends to fill the place up.
I don't have enough personal young friends to pull in there. And I know from seeing people that try to book some of the bars around here, and the bars that book bands around here are fucking sketchy. Right. But I'm internet friends with some of the people that try to book around here, and like, they're just like in constant throes of despair and stuff like that. And I have little fantasies in my head every once in a while, but like, how could you make it work in this city? Like where would the venue have to be that it would make sense and that people would come out and everything like that? But it never materializes into something that would make sense. And the things that would make sense, or at least would be my vibe, aren't going to happen in this population center. Right. Like I could probably find a space to put on like some sort of crazy ass warehouse show somewhere, but you know, it's just going to be an ill-attended, which is to say no one would come, show in a warehouse. It's not like at least if you're doing that kind of thing in somewhere like Toronto, like you have enough of a population base that like, you know, when you do like a ask a punk house party kind of thing, you know, there are punks to ask. that's the difference here, as I would. So yeah, it's one of those things that just, I don't know.
Breaking into Toronto in the big picture is probably much more difficult because it seems like big city scenes are resentful of anybody trying to come in from the outside. That's not to say that if you laid out a big amount of money and got a big headliner, people would show up. But you could just roll into Toronto and start setting up a scene. And
But I don't want to.
Everybody
either,
wants
right?
to bring the bands to their hometown. I get that. And we did it. You know, when I was very young, we did it. And we had a pretty good amount of success with it. But we were so young and we ran with the crowd. Like, you can't expect to draw a crowd to a show if you're not a regular. That's one thing. All these local musicians who expect people to show up to their shows and they don't go out to any shows. It's just one of those things. You got to be really into the scene.
Well, and the other part of this that I've become more conscious of, just given the kind of writing that I'm doing right now, is because the flip side of that is that, you know what, I don't just want to put on shows because like, I don't think that demographically I can make it work, but you know what, you could make it work putting on something that's like a little festival where it's a destination thing, right? Where people come out to it. It's a special thing. It's not just relying on like the local bar scene kind of to keep it going. And so I've thought about that and been like, okay, like little festival might be something to build up to create as I get into my 40s and I start to, you know, start to figure out what I'm doing in my life. Like, that'd be a nice little legacy thing. The problem with that, right? The problem with that is that the bands never just show up to play your fantasy things when you go create like a lineup in your head of who would be cool to come play this event. It always it's always contingent on what else that band is going on, like where they are, where else they're touring. So I'll go onto Facebook and I'll see these shows people are listing that are like, that, you know, seem like really crazy lineups that they're putting together. And I'm like, wow, these are really spectacular sounding shows. But then you look and you go, oh, no. That band is on a tour of their own. And they happen to be, you know, routing through the area. So the promoter picked them up and kind of built a show around them. But from a, like a chicken and egg standpoint, the band was already kind of planning to go through that area, and the promoter then, you know, took the lemons and made lemonade out of it. It wasn't that the promoter was just like sitting around, you know, smoking a joint and fantasizing about who would be really cool to come play.
Calling every band that they really wanted to go. Yeah,
because like the reality is that like unless you're paying gobs of money to fucking travel a band in, the band's not coming through unless they're coming through, right? So it's one of those things where like the reality of putting on shows, I don't think quite matches up to where I actually physically am. So I've got to push that out of my head or I'm going to lose a lot of money. But John,
maybe you get super lucky and you get two really good 3-band packages that are going to be in roughly the same area at the same time. And you build around those 6 bands, you know? But the real problem, Adam, at this point is the fact of the matter is you're a responsible guy, you got young kids, you know, pretty suburban life. The risk reward, it's all about, you know, how much you sit down with the lovely Mrs. White and say, hey, how much could we afford to lose if I could want to put this thing together? And she's like, $0. Go to work.
You know what? I gotta pick my battles on that because I brought up the other day, we were sitting there doing the dishes and I'm like, you know, I'm just about ready to get these Some Party cassette tapes pressed. And she's like, oh yeah. And I'm like, you know, like, it ain't gonna be free. Like I'm running over the costs of it, but clearly, you know, she was fine. She didn't seem to care, but it's clearly one of those things where like, you know, I can't bring some stupid money losing project to bear, you know, week on week, right? I gotta be careful.
Well, your mindset can get twisted because most of these bands we like are not big earners, you know? So maybe one of my very, very favorite bands on earth is $2,500. And you start saying, boy, that's really not that much money. You know, we make car payments, you know, or you start doing things in your mind. You're like, oh, $2,500, really not that much money, but it really is too much money to pay just to have a private, you know, to stroke your ego or whatever the case may be.
Yeah. I mean, like if you lose a whole bunch of money, it's like, well, am I just paying them to hang out with me? Because that's kind of weird.
Pretty much.
You know what I mean? So, yeah.
Although I have thought about something here. And so I am, what am I, 37? John, am I 37?
I think you're 37, Adam.
I think I'm 37, right? Could I not, for my 40th birthday, just like get the fucking band I want to come play in my basement to like 3 people and just be like, you know what? You only turned 41, so let's make this happen.
Well, that's a little different. I mean, like people have I've often used like people pay like a wedding band like $6,000. Like, why would I pay a wedding band when I could just pay World Inferno to come do that? You know, but I mean, like, I don't think they would. But it's like that's different. That's like a big celebration. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I get that.
I'd come, Adam, but then John would be mad because I haven't come to one of his shows yet. So
I'll go. We'll hang out. It'll be a good time.
I'm gonna RS. Yeah, you know, it's more drivable than Philly.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm so Midwestern. I always look at everything like driving. Oh, it's only 12 hours, you know. But I maybe I need to start flying out of Chicago or something. I don't know. We'll see.
We'll see. So, anyways, John, I'm glad your show went well.
Thank you, Adam.
You want to play a song or anything?
Actually, yes, but I'm going to mention a couple of things real quick, and maybe you guys have. Is we often do record collecting, and we're not going to do that today. However, I just want to point out like 3 records that have come out recently that are like really cool. The Spits have put out a live cassette, which astoundingly is better sound quality than their albums. It's out now for $10, and like it's great. Like if you're a Spits fan, it's a must have. Like it is great. Screaming Females just put out a singles collection that's basically like rarities and B-sides, and those records usually aren't that great. But for the Screaming Females, like B-side collection is amazing. If you don't know Screaming Females, this is the record to check out. Singles, too, like really great. Lastly, Handsome Dick Manitoba put out his first solo album ever, and really his first album, I think it's really not a Dictator's record, and it doesn't sound like a Dictator's record. Like you're hoping it will, but it really doesn't. It actually kind of sounds like him doing Bruce Springsteen or even like 60s AM psychedelic rock, and it's not an amazing record. And if you're not a Dictators fan, don't get it. But I will say it's strangely touching. And if you are a Dictators fan, check it out. I mean, it's not like the greatest record ever, but it's like him being like Handsome Dick Manitoba. He's made a lot of bad choices in his life. You know, is he a good guy or not? That's up to you to decide, or not even. But it's a guy really being honest about his life and who he is, and kind of detailing that on a record. And it's quite a moving record. I was surprised how much I'm enjoying it and how much I was moved by it. Like, it's this guy that, you know, is near the end of his career, or someone near the end of his career. He's had some bumps in the road, and he's looking back on all of it. So it's a pretty interesting record.
Hmm. Is he the primary songwriter?
He is, and you can tell.
Interesting, because, you know, in the early Dictators days, he was not.
No, the Dictators was all Andy Chernoff, and that's the thing. And now they hate each other. So
matter of fact, the very, very first album, Go Girl Crazy, I believe that Handsome Dick Manitoba is listed as like a special guest or something.
Maybe he's on the cover, though.
Yeah, it's true. But anyway, it doesn't matter. But that is good. You know, I think this year has been a little... I don't think it's been an amazing, amazing year for punk rock records, but there's a lot of like...
Very good record.
There hasn't been a lot of tens, but there's been a lot of eights.
Yeah, I agree.
I matter of fact, because, you know, we're finishing up our year-end best of list. I don't know when anybody will hear this, but they might be close to being out by then. But
hey, we're not that far behind.
I had a pretty good... Well, you know, we have no website, so...
True.
But we have, but you know, I my original list started with, it's got close to 30 things on it that I'm trying to winnow down to 20. I mean, some of them weren't as strong contenders as others. And there's about 17 that are just stone cold locks. And, you know, there's always those few kind of slushy ones at the bottom. But
Tom, you Andy Chernoff is listed as lead vocals on the Dictators records, but he's not. Handsome Dick sings almost all those songs.
Yeah, I don't know. I just remember the first album. There was something weird about it, but I don't remember exactly what it is.
Yeah, he's not even like listed. He's on it, though, isn't he? Isn't he the singer?
I assume. You know, that was probably the weakest of those of the three real albums.
Oh, I say that's the greatest by far.
Nah, I don't think so.
Oh, I love the first Dictators album.
Manifest Destiny and what was it? Manifest Destiny and Blood Brothers were both better.
Secret Weapon, Handsome Dick Manitoba.
Okay. What does that mean?
I don't know. Anyway, Adam, any records you want to mention or anything like that?
No. I don't even know where I am right now.
So anyway, not Larry Wallace. Sandy Sanderson of the Pink Fairies passed away, and I think that might be the last of the original Pink Fairies.
Yeah, the one died just like 2 months ago?
Yeah. Larry Wallace died. Twink is still alive.
Now Larry Wallace was in the rig, like OG Motorhead that didn't last. Was this guy who just died too or no?
No, actually, I believe he's on the record, but he's not like one of the main. Let's do some history. So there was the Deviants. The Deviants were a super freaky, super aggressive late hippie band. And when people say hippie, they think of, you know, Peter, Paul, and Mary or the Carpenters. Like the Deviants are almost like the UK Stooges. Maybe not as much, but like freaky, weird, aggressive, drugged out guys. You know,
the think less Peter, Paul, and Mary and more Charles Manson.
Kind of like the MC5. Maybe. Well, I don't know if that's a good example. You know, just freaky.
Well, MC5 had a huge hippie influence, or had a huge. You know, they came from that peace and love thing, but they just got more militant about it.
Yeah, but see, like MC5 were militant, whereas the Deviants were like just freaks. But MC5 kind of like rocks harder, whereas Deviants are like freakier. You know, anyways, so the Deviants kicked out the main guy Mick Farren, and they became the Pink Fairies. And Sandy Sanderson was one of the original Pink Fairies. Twink, Paul Rudolph, and what's his name? Who was talking? Larry Wallace. Then they kicked Twink out of the band, and then they put out a couple more records. Then the original version of Motorhead was actually Lemmy fronting the Pink Fairies, but then they kicked out. Sandy Sanderson kept Larry Wallace in the group and had brought in a new drummer, and then they kicked out Larry Wallace and became, I guess, real Motorhead, if that's how you want to look at it.
The classic lineup, yeah.
So Pink Fairies, to a degree, Pink Floyd, Motorhead, and Hawkwind are all extremely tightly related to each other. So anyways, Sandy Sanderson is the only guy to have been on every Deviant's record and every Pink Fairy's record. So you could say he's the main Deviant, main Pink Fairy. And so he passed away. He wasn't that old. I think he was like 70-something, which is not that old. And it's quite sad. But
from where I'm sitting, it ain't.
Yeah, yeah. But you know, he put out a ton of great music, and we're just going to play some Pink Fairies and Sandy Sanderson, R.I.P. And listen, like we always say, you know, appreciate them when they're still around to receive the appreciation. So this is Pink Fairies with Sandy Sanderson.
That was Pink Fairies. So we were going to talk about Punk Rock Bowling. The lineup has been announced for the 2020 version of this. A lineup that has a very special, from a John Gentile standpoint, headliner.
But is it bittersweet, Adam? That's the question. Is it
bittersweet? That's good. So let's do this. I'm going to omit the headliner for now, and just run through most of the rest of the list here. So the 2020.
Let's just skip all three headliners, so it can be a little bit of a shell game.
Yeah, that'll work. Shell games are what we want. So skipping the three headliners. The
Adam, you skip the three headliners. I really don't care.
All right,
you, but go ahead, go ahead.
So Punk Rock Bowling this year runs from May 21st through the 25th in downtown Las Vegas at the Downtown Las Vegas Events Center. So not including the headliners. So we're talking about Mighty Mighty Boston's Streetlight Manifesto, yeah. Lunatics, yeah. The Addicts.
Meh.
What's the opposite
John
of meh?
But you can't even tell if John and I are making like happy mehs or
yeah, like I'm not sure. I'm not sure because like, none of you have made a good noise yet. So well, I don't know.
I'm sorry. Mighty Mighty Boston's and Streetlight Manifesto are not the stir our souls.
Meh.
I'm just all right. Fine. The Addicts, Propagandhi. You're mad, Propagandhi. Oh my God. A Veil. Stiff Little Fingers.
I'd like to see A Veil. Oh yeah, yeah. Stiff Little Fingers.
Okay, see, now we're getting into bands where I'm not sure who they are. Rose Tattoo, who's that?
Ah! Rose Tattoo is the AC/DC ripoff band. They are the band that was formed by Harry Vanda and Malcolm and Angus Young's older brother, Harry Young, which was kind of the sequel to AC/DC. They never achieved the mainstream success of AC/DC, but it's somewhat surprising that they're back again because they haven't been around for like 35 or 40 years. And so a lot of people...
Feverish following. Feverish.
A lot of people say they're better than AC/DC. They're not better than AC/DC, but they are interesting and very good. They're really more like Thin Lizzy than they are AC/DC, but they're from Australia.
Okay. You got the Ruts DC.
That's cool.
GBH. Anti-Flag. Municipal Waste. The Bronx. The Lawrence Arms.
Did you say Hawkwind?
I did not. Let's see who else we got here. I'm just going to start jumping around. Good Riddance, the Agrolites. You have Reunion of the Epoxies. Pairs, the Flatliners, Bad Cop, Bad Cop. Who else?
You don't like Bad Cop, Bad Cop, Tom?
No, I do. I'm just in general. A lot of... Bad Cop is going to be touring with Anti-Flag during that time. And they're playing here locally at a pretty small club. I probably will go.
So I will before we get to the headliners here, and because I wasn't participating in the memeing or whatever noises you guys were making as these were going through. I am largely cool with a lot of this lineup. It is fine to me. If you told me there was a show where I could go see, you know, Propagandhi and an Epoxies reunion and the Bronx and the Lawrence Arms and Stiff Little Fingers and, you know, GBH and Single Mothers, and like I'm like, oh, I'm fine with all those. I'm happy with that. That's cool. I don't have a problem with that. But oh, hey, Boston's. I'll go see the Boston's. Whatever.
Fastest selling PRB debate to date so far.
Now,
it's hard to believe. It seems like it was better about three or four years. I don't know.
The headliners. Yes, the headliners for the 2020 Punk Rock Bowling. On the right hand side of the poster here, Coxbarer.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
On the left-hand side of the poster here, Madness.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, no, you're not sure if you can get.
Do you know that their big hit song "Our House" was actually about a chalet? Our house in the middle of the street. Maybe not.
That first Madness record is great, and then in the middle.
Oh boy! Here we go. We're wet with
confusing Adam. John Gentile's various passions.
Indeed.
Circle Jerks.
Yeah, the crowd goes wild.
But why, John, does the Circle Jerks reuniting to play Punk Rock Bowling so vex you?
I'm excited, but I'm concerned, Adam. And here's and honestly, we wouldn't even be having this if the punk news listeners we wouldn't be having this show if the punk news listeners weren't stingy dicks that wouldn't give 15 grand to Keith Morris. Here's my wildly unsubstantiated analysis that could be wildly incorrect.
As if however, every punk is on punknews.org.
Well, listen, if all the punk news readers band together and put forth their fair share, then we would not even be having this conversation. And I don't know if it's a good thing or it's a bad thing. First of all, Circle Jerks rule. I own every single officially released Circle Jerks item there is, including both versions of Wild in the Streets, including the rare single version of Jerks on 45. I've got them all. I'm a Circle Jerks maniac. I'm a Keith Morris maniac. But I might like Off even more. I love Off. So, of course, as listeners know, about 6 months ago or maybe 4 months ago or whatever, there was a fundraiser to raise money for an Off movie. I think they wanted $200,000 or $150,000, and it came maddeningly close. Like it fell short of 15 grand. And I think instead of like having, well, if we come short, we'll still keep the money. They did, if we come short, then we won't keep any money at all. So they didn't fund the thing at all. And then right after that happened, pretty much, well, two other members of Off went off on their own thing. Stephen McDonald, who's been in the Melvins now for about 3 years, did some Melvin stuff and Red Cross stuff. Mario Rubalcaba did a bunch of Earthless stuff. some hot snake stuff and some other stuff on Facebook, and this is public. Keith Morris has expressed frustration that other members of Off are off doing things when he's ready to do Off stuff, which I can understand.
Wow, how it sounds like exactly the same beef he had with the Circle Jerks.
Well, that's exactly it. And what does Keith Morris do when he feels that the other members of the band aren't as committed as he is? He starts a new band, or he reforms a new band, his old band, like he did with Flag, you know. So there's a lot of open questions that no one seems to be answering. And Keith Morris has been somewhat surprisingly quiet about this, because he's usually pretty open, you know, but he hasn't said anything about this really. And so the question is this, I mean, it didn't feel like Flag competed with Off, but it sort of did, because as Flag did more and more festival dates, Off seemed to tour less and less, you know. And so is Circle Jerks just going to be a festival thing he does once in a while, and Off is still going to be his main thing? Or is he going to say, listen, I'd rather just rake in the festival cash with Flag and Circle Jerks, because the Off got like Off doesn't make as much money as Flag or
it's like tiny clubs.
Right. It's like, so if these guys don't want to do it, then why am I wasting my time when I can just go get the big checks? And I'm not blaming Keith Morris for getting the big checks. If anybody,
no, he's not a wealthy guy.
If anybody in punk deserves the big checks, it's Keith Morris. That being said, and I'm excited to see Circle Jerks. I might buy out just for Circle Jerks. However, Circle Jerks are also playing Punk and Drublic Europe, and Fat Mike alludes to the fact that they might be doing a whole Punk and Drublic tour USA with Circle Jerks. That's not confirmed, but he alluded to that on purpose, so we'll see. But anyway, the point being is this just kind of a fun one-off or multi-off thing that'll be fun, or is this kind of like taking time away from Off and kind of making sure that Off 4 won't happen? I think we're not wrong in speculating that Off 1, 2, and 3 were all super amazing records, but where do you go from there? Because if Off 4 was the repeat of Off 3, especially after 6 years, it might seem somewhat stale. So maybe
God, it hasn't been that long, has it?
Yes, it's like 2014 is like Off 3. It's crazy, right?
Wow.
And so,
how could that be?
I hear you. Off 3 is amazing. It feels like it came out last year, but it didn't. But anyway, the point being is this might, and this is not confirmed at all. This is just wild speculation, which is what we do. Circle Jerks might signal the end of Off or the winding down of Off, which is, I'm not thrilled about that at all. If I have to pick, do I only get the Circle Jerks or do I only get Off? At this point, I think I'm picking Off, to tell you the truth. Not that I don't love Circle Jerks, but I've seen it. It's been done. It feels like Off is more vibrant. But I don't know, boys.
I just think what's going to happen is they're going to suck all the life out of the Circle Jerks they can get and soak every dollar out of it. And then and then he'll go back to his more satisfying project of Off when the money's gone from the Circle Jerks.
Yeah, honestly, I think he doesn't really like dealing with the guys in Circle Jerks. I mean, he was very explicit that like it was a pain in the ass dealing with them. I feel like with Off, like I don't think he dislikes the guys in Off, but I feel like he feels betrayed or annoyed. He's really always annoyed that, you know, Stephen McDonald's off doing his own thing and that Moira Rubalcaba is off doing his thing. You know?
Well, and the guitar player plays in like 50 bands, right?
No, I think Dimitri, I think all he does is Off at this point. He was in a bunch of bands, but I think Off is Dimitri, he's like,
oh, yeah, because the two of them, I think, wrote all the songs.
Right.
You know, something that's interesting about this, you know, to me, growing up, listening to punk rock since I was a teenager 30 years ago, Circle Jerks always existed in Black Flag Shadow.
Oh, did they? Really?
That's just, oh, absolutely. And people love the Circle Jerks. Don't get me wrong. I'm not dissing the Circle Jerks. But boy, have we come full circle where Black Flag has become a joke and Circle Jerks are becoming a celebrated festival headliner. I mean, who could have seen that coming? To me, this says
we also saw this coming 7 years ago when the headbutting started. You know what I mean?
Well, and the other thing is, to me, this means the possibility of a Keith Morris Black Flag reunion is not out the window. Now, matter of fact, Keith has even said, I think, on a couple occasions they tried to. I think in his book he talked about a couple of meetings where they tried to get it together. So, I mean, if Greg Ginn wants to pull his head out of his ass, boy, you talk about leaving money on the table.
That guy.
You know, because I was making fun of Black Flag last week about how they're at like the Jerry only fronted version of their career right now, where they're just a joke.
Yeah.
So I don't know, but that's it. It's interesting. I would love to see the Circle Jerks. Haven't seen them for 100 years, probably 20 years more. I'm sure they'll be good. I don't know if I'll get out to Las Vegas or not, but I'm sure they won't announce anything with the Punk and Drublic stuff, whether they're going to do it in, you know, Detroit or anywhere close to me. I'm sure they're not going to announce anything till after.
That Mike's is next month they're announcing.
Oh, really? But the American dates?
That's what.
Well, I know they owe Pittsburgh. They owe Pittsburgh a date, right? Because they canceled Pittsburgh last year.
Yeah, that was surprising, honestly.
I wonder what happened with that. I think it was bad sales, right?
Right.
Hmm. Yeah, I don't know. People in Pittsburgh like to drink beer, but maybe they don't like that expensive craft beer. They're more into their $2 Rolling Rocks or whatever. Don't know. I don't know what 2020 holds. I'm waiting with bated breath, John. Bated breath.
Adam, what does this signify to you? Are you excited? Do you not care?
I mean, I'm again, like, on a whole, the lineup seems cool to me. On the specific, like, off level, I was really hoping that next off record was going to come out, because I was a fan of, you know, everything that they've done up to this point. I suspect that my fanship of off is less a general fanship of off and more a fanship of Keith Morris. So if he can find an outlet to be doing what he wants to do and putting out new music and being loud, angry Keith Morris, I'm okay to kind of to go where the wind takes me on that. Like, doesn't that seem just sort of like a reasonable thing? Like, if Keith decides he's gonna make music as you know, Keith Morris Experience, then you know, whatever.
How far are you gonna follow him, Adam? Are you gonna follow him if he goes into like weird Iggy Pop territory where he puts out an album where we can't even tell if he's singing on it, or
how far is your fanship going? Keith already did that. It's called Midget Hand Job.
Oh, really? I never listened to that.
He's got a spoken word like thing. It's called like Midget Hand Job. It's very experimental.
Excellent. Just what we want in our punk rock.
I don't know. I'm not committed to this from a religious standpoint, but I'm not despairing, as I guess that's what it is. I mean, John's, you know, rolling around in bed at night, you know, unable to sleep, you know, just, you know, I'm
no.
What's Keith Morris going to do next?
To a degree, this may be a good thing, because if Keith, as branded as off, was not able to raise the attention and money by which to make his next crazy project happen, perhaps Keith, with a newfound infusion of fat festival cash and fat festival attention via the Circle Jerks, maybe that allows him to accomplish what he wants to.
If only they had left partial funding on the Kickstarter, everything would be different. I don't know why they didn't do that.
I wonder if it's a cut thing, like you get different cut.
Maybe.
The company gets a different cut or something.
Yeah, that's a possibility.
I don't know. I hate all these stupid crowdfunding crap.
Man. If I'd known it was this close, I would have went out there and collected money myself for him.
I mean, the fact that... I'm always suspicious of some of these band Kickstarters, because some of them, they genuinely need the money to make it happen. But I've seen a few where the band's just going to do it anyways. And the chief... what's the word I'm looking for here? The chief...
Offender,
yes. Offender in this regards is DOA, where the last two DOA records, they've gone out and tried to crowdfund, and they didn't come anywhere close to the goals, but they just like, were like, fuck it, they just made the records anyways. Which, I mean, on the one hand, I'm glad DOA went and made those records, but it makes the need for the Kickstarter to make it happen seem a little bit... little bit weird. Like, you know, granted, I don't want Joey to have to pay for all that shit completely out of pocket. Like, I get why being able to raise money beforehand is good. I think it just means that the business model of those particular websites maybe doesn't quite match up with the way that it's actually going to work. Whereas, you know, DOA just went and did it, but off didn't.
Well, circle jerks are awesome. I wonder if it's not a passive aggressive, but maybe aggressive move by Keith saying to the other guys who are off, listen, you're not my only date to the dance, you know. But on the other hand, like, does Stephen McDonald really need off? He's got the Melvins thing and the Red Cross thing, you know. And honestly, he might get paid more in Melvins than he does in off, you know. Mario Rubalcaba maybe more so, because is anybody really going to go see Earthless? I guess they do, but.
Yeah, I'm going to guess that Melvin's draw better than off, or
comparable at least.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, though, Stephen McDonald is not a owner of Melvin's, where he might be an owner of off, you know, or get a bigger cut at least.
Yeah, I don't know. And nobody's selling enough records really to make a huge, you know, it's not like they're getting big royalties checks
either. Yeah, yeah. So. I mean, honestly, like
they got to be on the road. I mean, that's how they got to make their living.
Yeah. So we'll see, man. We'll see. I saw off about 4 months ago. They were amazing.
Really? I didn't realize they were playing that recently.
Maybe I saw the very last off show there ever was. It was at
there this you
is
go.
Hard. It was at this
in
is
that case. Court. You better hang on to it.
Yeah, I know.
I just fell down the most distracting internet rabbit hole as we were talking about that, because I was trying to figure out, did the Circle Jerks play in my university town while I was at school, and did I go see them? And I feel like they played, and I'm pretty sure I went to see them, but this got me down one of these fantastic places where you were pulling up stuff from the internet from like 2000 and 3, and the, you know, I right now I'm on someone's blogspot page where they're reviewing shows that I was at, you know, but in this it's like being transported back, not only just transported back to old shows I was at, but looking at this website that was clearly like 15 years old in terms of design and writing, and like it's just someone's old like 45 paragraph blog style. There's only 3 entries in this blog. It was like pre-social media when everyone just had a blog, and I'm going through and I'm reading this and I'm like I don't think I did see them, because when the Circle Jerks came through my town, they were touring with Pennywise and Ignite.
I saw that tour,
and they mentioned they play at a venue that I certainly did not see Pennywise at. So I must have just conflated these things, or there's another show. I don't know. Looking up anything from the internet from the early 2000s is weird. There's like this incredibly spotty, there's this like spotty omissions everywhere where like it was pre the age when everything was super documented. So it's just
It's pretty bad when you're going through the internet hoping that someone like entered a newspaper article or something about a show, because that was the only. I get that all the time. Like, what year was that? I'm trying to find something online, and there's literally no online presence.
I was trying to figure out what bands that I had saw when I was like 15, and kind of like sneaking into bars before I could drink, and the information about like 19, what would it have been like 1997, maybe 1996, like in the Niagara region, is basically non-existent. It's like a black hole. I could probably find more stuff about the 50s than I could about like the early internet era. It's super strange. Anywho,
Adam, I'm going to continue the discussion briefly. Briefly alluded to this. What if Keith Morris did the Keith Morris Experience, and you went and you saw him, and he did Black Flag, Circle Jerks, and off songs all in one show?
I mean, I would be fine with that, but I don't know if that catapults him into the realm of like old dude singer songwriter punk. That, not that he's going to play them acoustic, but like I don't know, like you can go see a guy like, say, like Kevin Seconds play a show, right, where he's going to play some of his solo stuff, but he might play some 7 second songs that he's sort of like reconstituted for his solo act. But you end up trending towards being solo acoustic guy because you're relying more on yourself and not on an actual band being with you, right? And just like that's sort of where you end up. And then you, but then at that point, like you're not really going to see him being an active artist. You're going to see him like play the old hits. And then like that was the one thing that I really liked about Off was that Off never felt like a nostalgia act.
Absolutely agree.
Right? Like Off felt like a fucking real band that was doing real music. And yes, it had the quote unquote legendary Keith Morris as the vocalist doing a very, you know, familiar, you know, Keith Morris style vocals on it, but it always seemed like its own thing, and that's what kind of, I think, made that band way more interesting to me than any of these you know, late 70s early 80s bands that are kind of kicking around still and just playing their early glories. If it was just the Keith experience, like John, if it was the Keith experience, he would have to have like a real corker of a solo thing out to justify it not being that. And I don't know if like how much of a solo guy is Keith Morris? Like, I don't mean like a,
I don't
how,
believe, how much I don't a solo believe he plays troubadour. Guitar.
Like, does he, does,
so
like, does
he would
play?
Have to have somebody bring with him. I don't think so. I do not believe that he plays the guitar, at least not with any proficiency. So he'd have to bring somebody with him, and that changes the dynamic of the act too.
I mean,
I'll play guitar for you, Keith.
I mean, he could just become Henry and just like get on stage and yell at people.
He does that anyway at the show.
Yeah, he kind of does. Yeah. He's pretty good at it.
Not to draw this out, but Adam, you do raise an excellent point in that, like the idea of being that vibrant and not going back in your back catalog. That is the way to do it. Proof in the pudding. Classic in Love with Jesse Michaels. Amazing, vibrant sounding bands. And it's because he didn't do the old stuff. You know, he did new, awesome stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, it helps when your new material is great. You know what I mean? So.
Yeah.
You know what? I actually, when I saw, when I saw them, I felt like it would have been disappointing to me if they would have been like, here's some Op Ivy songs. Like it, I liked that band was that band.
Yeah, definitely.
The problem with if they had played Op Ivy songs is it's frustrating for a band like that who wants to stand on their own 2 feet. If you rely on that material, everybody's going to be drawn toward. Everybody wants to hear the Op Ivy stuff, and you're never really going to give yourself a chance to succeed with the new material. It's just something that people will tolerate until you play your next Op Ivy song. That's, you know?
But then the counteract act though, how about Jello, who does Dead Kennedys, Jello, and even Lard stuff in
the
show?
He does very, very, very little Dead Kennedys.
No, I've seen him do like 7 or 8 sometimes.
Yeah, I think in an hour show he does usually about 3, but
there's extenuating circumstances in Jello's case though, right?
He's always making music. He's more into quantity than quality, if we're being honest. Well, even not though, only you that, know, the Guantanamo School of Medicine stuff is good, but
he's got a lot of quality, though. You know,
but he's got a lot more quantity than he does quality, John.
I don't know if I actually like when we did Jello Week. Like I actually was surprised at how good some of that Jello, like Jello and the DOA record. I remembered it sucking.
Yeah, that's good.
It's great. You know, so I don't know. I mean, I not everything he does is amazing, but his New Orleans record is amazing. I love that record. You know,
yeah, I'm not into that, but he's definitely not afraid to let it roll and see what happens.
Right.
He always seems to have the tape rolling whenever he has a jam session, and it might end up being a record. Sometimes maybe it shouldn't be, but that's right.
All right, Tom, you wanna play a song here, and we'll roll on.
I thought this was supposed to be a short episode.
Yeah, exactly. Time for bed, fellas. You know, okay, so one of the bands, I my mind is so addled, I can't remember what I played, though I haven't been very good about playing songs lately. So one of the old bands that put out a record this year that I really like, and I know they're having all kinds of issues with their label, they haven't been able to tour or anything else, but was the old Boston band, The Freeze. They're actually now in Arizona, but it's going to end up being, I'm sure, one of my top 10-ish favorite albums of the year. But they put out a new album this year, and it's really not many people are aware of it. So I'm going to do my tiny little part to raise awareness of that. So let's play the title track from the new Freeze album. It just came out this year. The title of the album is Calling All Creatures. So this will be the Freeze Calling All Creatures.
Thank you. conceived our genetic mockers shine. Social engineers appear outside. They trust that our parents will ready us for schools. They'll separate elites from the fools. Don't fall for their distractions. Deep lessons with the same excuse. Concentrate on your actions. Maybe you'll see we all crawled as creatures from the same black lagoon. We will return to its scene. We once crawled as creatures from the same black lagoon. We will return to it soon. Of our behavior is all we leave behind. Each of us gone in a blink in the eye of time. Try to stop and think about others on this ride, 'cause some of them won't last through the night. Don't fall for their distractions. Deep lessons with the same excuse. Concentrate on your actions. Maybe you'll see me all crawled as creatures from the same black lagoon. We will return to it soon. We once crawled as creatures from the same black lagoon. We will return to it soon.
John, what else we touched on before we get out of here?
I guess there's only one other thing that I want to touch on, at least. I mean, if you guys want to touch on the other stuff, we can. But the Deviants are going on tour. I mean, not the Deviants. The Deviants are not going on tour. The Residents are going on tour. The Residents, are, of course, are the, I think, starting at mid-70s, art, weirdo art, proto-punk, punk, experimental. I wouldn't even call them punk, honestly. Just weirdo art, experimental performance group. That sometimes does music, sometimes does movies, and sometimes does other things. The important part about this tour is that Hardy, it's the first tour after Hardy Fox passed away. And you say, well, John, who's Hardy Fox? The answer is no one really knows who Hardy Fox is. Hardy Fox is the guy that always claimed to be the PR person for the Residents. But as we know now, most likely he was the mastermind behind the Residents, or at least the main driving force. And so this is the first tour where he's not the main driving force. But that being said, he probably wasn't the only driving force. And honestly, we don't even know that if he ever did tour with them ever, or even if he did tour with them, has he toured with them in the past 20 or 30 years? We don't know, because they always wore masks. So who knows what we're going to get, but it's probably going to be weird. I guess one of the things that I wouldn't say is frustrating for a fan, but is curious for a fan, is so Hardy Fox has passed away. Are the other guys there? Are they long-term residents as well? Or is it just like – or is it like Kiss? It's like two guys you don't even know.
A couple old guys and a bunch of kids.
Right, right. Like, or even worse, is it like the Vibrators, like one guy and three dudes, or
yeah, not even one of the main guys.
Or is it like the Temptations, where it's no Temptation?
You yeah.
know? But I mean, I don't know if frustrating is the right word. I guess curious, because maybe the Resonance as a touring unit never were any of the original. Like, we don't know, you know? So I'm very excited to see this, because I've never seen the Resonance. And I
really this kind is of amazing. You know, I wikied them. I actually have no knowledge of this band at all. You totally stumped me on this. Their origins go back all the way to 1966. Their first album came out in 1974, 45 years ago. So over 50 years ago when they started, Shreveport, Louisiana, the hotbed of art punk.
And they've got about 100 albums, literally. I mean, they've got a lot of – they put out three last year.
Well, you know? I got enough problems with Discogs hoarding. I'm going to have to not even look at it.
So, anyways, I'm excited for this. It's going to be really weird. I don't know. It's the first tour in a long, probably 6 or 7 years, I think. So, should be, and there's only about
are
six.
They, are they playing Philly?
They are, and I'm definitely going. You know, so this is going to be cool. Who knows what we're going to get? But I'm glad the Resonance are still doing something. And part of the mystery is you don't know who they are or what they're doing or what they're going to do or who's controlling it. And I guess that's half the fun. It's just an interesting element that the main guy, or the guy that was probably one of the main guys, is now passed away, you know?
I don't really have any particular residence follow up there.
Adam, you should book them for your festival in your basement.
You should, Adam. They'll do it.
They probably do it.
See if they ever break character, or if they just like sit at your table with your kids eating like toast and eggs for breakfast with their masks on.
It was a big eyeball masks.
John, on Discogs, they have 260 releases.
There you go.
Holy crap. Where do you even start with something like that?
Interestingly, there's a Devo Resonance rivalry in that they both recorded the Rolling Stone Satisfaction almost at the same time with each other and didn't know it. And both versions are kind of similar.
I just don't know about this. My gosh.
Hey, we did record for longer than I thought. So what do we do now? Do we crash and burn? Are we...
Don't we always crash and burn?
Oh, we've already crashed and burned. It's just a matter of shoveling the wreckage off the road so other traffic can get through.